Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Plot Lines. I'm your host, Connor. And today we have some news to discuss. And with me to discuss that is Nathan CJ Hood. Welcome back to the show, Nathan.
Hello, Connor. It's been a little while, and I am so delighted to be back, especially talking about Lord of the Rings stuff.
Well, you return, and so has Peter Jackson.
I mean, the two things must be related, right?
Indeed. Now, you know, it's not the same thing as like somehow Palpatine returns. This is at least much more logical that Peter Jackson would return.
Possibly. I guess we'll get into, you know, into this a bit. But there is this sense of these days, I don't know if you found this, Connor, but like every franchise has to reboot every year or two. Every franchise needs to restore its or prolong how much they can get out of any film or series as possible. And yeah. I guess the return of Palpatine's a version of that. Perhaps what we're going to talk about is another version of that too.
Somehow Gollum returned. No. yeah. No. I saw a great, we'll talk about this a little bit, but in one of the comments sections for the new Rings of Power trailer, one of the comments was somehow Rings of Power returned. Because it's just a complete mess. And like, I really thought there was a possibility that it might just be absolutely washed away because it failed spectacularly, but somehow, like Palpatine, it returned.
It's not yet been sunk under the sea like Numenor.
Yes. If only.
That day will come, though. That day will come.
It will it will feel the wrath of Iluvatar. But the big news, as I said, is new Lord of the Rings with Peter Jackson to produce The Hunt for Gollum, directed by Andy Serkis himself. So Gollum is directing Gollum. Not sure how that's going to go. And then the producing team and writing are the same people that wrote Lord of the Rings, Boyens and Walsh, who are Peter Jackson's collaborators, are back on the case. Now, it's weird to be celebrating or even thinking about celebrating this because, well, The Hobbit didn't go too well. Though this is supposed to be coming out in 2026. Maybe there's not as much pressure to get something rushed, get something done here. So, you know, is there something to look forward to here? What do you think?
Well, I think firstly that there might just be a little bit of context we could add to this. So this is being produced by Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. who have bought the rights to make more films out of the books. And this is, I think, significant in the sense that with the Rings of Power, they only had the rights to like the appendix of the Lord
of the Rings. I thought they had full rights. It's just they only could do TV shows.
I thought it was the Rings of Power had the appendices to the Lord of the Rings, but they could make TV shows out of that. But they didn't. So they didn't have the rights to the Silmarillion, for example. Yeah. Whereas Warner Brothers seemed to have the rights to the Lord of the Rings, and as a consequence, their films are going to be based on the Lord of the Rings or what's in there. This is the second film that they're producing. The first one is an animated film about Helm Hammerhand and his fight against the Dunlings, which sounds amazing. It's Brian Cox is one of the actors involved. So you know, it's got some kind of force behind it. So that's going to be the first thing that's released, and then this will come second. Andy Serkis was the second director on The Hobbit, so he did a lot of the shooting of like battle scenes and things like that, while Jackson was doing maybe a lot of the main stuff. So he has quite a bit of experience of doing it. And so I wonder, because you were saying like, oh, how is Gollum going to be the director at the same time? Well, he does have some experience at the very least, doing this kind of stuff. But at the same time, that's there's a big question mark there, right? Because as you alluded to, the Hobbit films are a very bloated, failed to recapture the magic of the Lord of the Rings or to establish its their own kind of magic or feel. Although some people do really like them, must be said. But you know, so the fact that then they're coming back, they're focusing on Gollum and, well, the hunt for Gollum. We could talk about what that might entail, but in brief, following the Gandalf kind of going on his quest to find out if Bilbo's ring is the One Ring or to just find out what it is, he tries to kind of pursue Gollum, who was the person who had the ring before Bilbo. He recruits Aragorn to this quest, or Aragorn is kind of involved in this too. And eventually Aragorn does find Gollum and brings him to Lothlorien, where he is kept. Mirkwood. He is kept in the dungeons there. But the elves are too kind, and they let him out time and again, you know, so he could still see the light, so he could be redeemed. But eventually some orcs attack and Gollum escapes. So that is what most people think the film is probably going to be kind of drawing inspiration from. And as, you know, just thinking about it, I mean, that's a pretty short story. It's about a page, if not a paragraph or two. So if The Hobbit, which was a 300 page book, felt bloated when it was three films, how's this going to work? Like, what are they going to do? I guess that's the question. So for me, I think there's cause for optimism, because it is people who were involved in The Lord of the Rings. So they're not people who fundamentally hate it or want to subvert it. As far as we know, they do genuinely appreciate Tolkien's work, and they were involved in a good production. But The Hobbit gives me pause for thought. What do you think, Connor?
Well, Andy Serkis, it's interesting that he did the battle scenes. I don't think the battle scenes was anybody's favorite part of The Hobbit. A lot of it was just sort of bloated CGI battles. So I can't imagine some of those scenes would be necessarily a good sort of representation, hopefully, of what he can do. Hopefully Andy Serkis can do better. But I think at least when people think of Andy Serkis and Gollum, they're thinking he's going to be playing Gollum. Mm. And that's not necessarily clear. It's clear that he will be directing it. But could it possibly mean that he's going to be directing someone else who's going to be playing Gollum?
That's an interesting thought, yeah. And it is possible, and it would be an interesting kind of twist on the character. It would be quite awkward if you're the actor who's come in to play Gollum, right? And you've got the previous guy who's so iconic. But I guess it's a physical role, isn't it, as well? Like, if you've ever seen behind the scenes on The Lord of the Rings, you know, Andy Serkis is in full latex, kind of rolling around and crawling and for hours and hours on end. He's 20 years older than he was back then. Maybe it is a younger man's role.
I mean, he's been doing those sort of acting jobs for a long time, right? That's a staple of what he does. And it's interesting that they're coming out with sort of the title right away. Mm-hmm. That they're telling you it's Hunt for Gollum, which you could have it could have been sort of an Aragorn story that they could have sort of referred to it as, because it seems if you're going to have a Hunt for Gollum, or if that's the main focus, it's also mostly going to be an Aragorn story, unless Gollum is somehow how we're going to see the film. We're going to see it from Gollum's perspective. He's going to be the protagonist of some kind. Also, it's interesting because in the Peter Jackson universe, the Mirkwood elves, I would say, were much more like dangerous and much more inhospitable. And so for them to get Gollum and then kind of just let him go, basically, eventually, you know, let him escape and stuff like that, it seems like it will be an internal contradiction.
That's a good point. And how closely they want to tie it to that world is probably a question as well. Obviously, they worked on that stuff, but there may be value in taking a somewhat different tone or direction, almost distinguishing it. I can't see that happening, but I feel like that might give it some strength in a way, because then it would be in, oh, okay, this is a new story or an independent story from the ones from 20 years ago. I think, though, they're probably going to emphasize how more continuity, and it's like, okay, there's Gandalf again, there's Aragorn again, all your favorite heroes are back. It's going to draw on a lot of nostalgia, I think.
And how do you do that? Is Ian McKellen going to reprise his role as Gandalf?
I think so. And I do wonder, like, you know, Bernard Hill sadly passed away, the actor for Theoden. So this is probably like the last time you're going to have the chance to cast Ian McKellen as Gandalf, or very close to it. He's not a young man by any stretch. So I do wonder if they've decided, okay, let's make a film where we can still get some of these actors to play their parts. Because maybe in the future we won't have that, and we'll have to tell different stories than the ones that involve these characters. So I do wonder if that's part of it. I think, though, the biggest challenge will probably be Aragorn, because if you've got Viggo Mortensen, well, he's older, right?
Yeah.
And he's playing Aragorn but younger. And although it wouldn't be a problem with the books, because Aragorn is a kind of withered, older man in the books, the way he is in the film, it wouldn't make much sense.
I mean, he still looks pretty withered in the movies.
That's true. But I still think you could see, like, he's not like 50, right?
Yeah, he's it's not close. I mean, he's supposed to be what is it? Is it like 13 years in between, or like how much time is it between? No, it's how much time is it between, like, sort of the time they set off, Frodo sets off on his quest and meets Aragorn, and this hunt for Gollum? It's like,
it's about 14 to 15 years. Oh no, is it more? I feel like it might be more. Actually, because it's so, Bilbo's birthday is also Frodo's birthday
mm-hmm.
party, and he turns, I want to say 30 or 33. But then when he begins the quest, he's 50.
But that really wasn't in the continuity of the movies.
No, like, it's almost like next week.
Yeah, well, it's literally as much the amount of time it took for Gandalf to go to Gondor and get back from Gondor, even though that is basically the entire length of a little less than the entire length of the trip that they're going to have to go on.
Yeah, he fast traveled, right?
Yeah. Well, I thought they could have, like, done something. Well, if they're doing something 13 years earlier, though part of me thinks that the hunt for Gollum has to be later, like closer to the time that they're actually beginning to leave the Shire, which, because if Aragorn is going to, you know, hunt for Gollum, get him in prison, or get him to the Mirkwood, then all he does is go back to the inn, right? That's all he does in between. But anyways, the point is if they were doing 13 years earlier, they could also involve young Boromir and young Faramir.
Hmm, that's true. Yeah.
Which I could see that being interesting, especially if they expanded on Gandalf's influence on the two boys.
Yeah, that would be an interesting kind of, because in the films, it's I think it's like mentioned very briefly. Mm-hmm. In the Return of King, it might even be the extended edition, where Denethor calls Faramir a wizard's pupil. But of course, in the books, this is much more fully fleshed out, and how the two boys grow up eventually ends up with their responses to the Ring of Power. Mm-hmm. And Boromir's fall to temptation to take it for power and Gondor and so on, whereas Faramir's ability to eventually overcome it, the temptation, and let the ring go, is from his love of what Gondor actually stands for. And I guess Gandalf has helped instill this. So that could be quite an interesting kind of subplot. And I guess you could also maybe bring in things like the Battle of Osgiliath. I feel like you could actually tie that in with the chronology of what's going on here in terms of things. Because in the wider story, I guess, well, there's two things. One is the hunt for Gollum is actually, there's two hunts in a way, because there's Aragorn's, but there's also Sauron's hunt for Gollum. So you could look at it like, okay, it's a race against time. You've got orcs, ringwraiths, etc., looking for Gollum. And of course, he is captured at some point and taken to Mordor, and he has escaped. But then beyond that, you've got Sauron's moves within Middle-earth going on. He's building his armies. He has pushed Gondor back to the Anduin. You've got... I get it's difficult because again you would have to compress a lot of things together, but you could do like he sends emissaries right to the dwarves, to the elves, to try and win them over at the Lonely Mountain, etc. So you can build all this stuff in if you do what you were suggesting and kind of compressing it to the kind of just before the Fellowship of the Ring, or kind of in that in between Bilbo's party and the setting off. You could maybe feature a number of these things and build the tension through that.
But do you think they can even make this sort of feel worthwhile? It seems such an ancillary story.
This is what I've been wrestling with all day. Like, can this work? Because in a way, there isn't like a natural plot here. Like, there's a story. There's an A to B. Aragorn hunts Gollum, he gets Gollum, and he brings Gollum back. And that's kind of the heart of it. You can try and kind of artificially build that up. So maybe Aragorn has to develop in some way through this quest. Maybe he, you'd have to kind of break some of the lore, but perhaps this is his first quest, like true quest or something, ranging in this part of the world. And by himself, or he's left his ranger band behind, and so on and so forth. but as you've kind of alluded to, we know what happens, and it's a secondary story to the Lord of the Rings, which is with the fate of the world. It's real important issues in our lives that we connect to, not just in terms of like bravery in battle, but it's like friendship and loyalty and wrestling with temptation of the ring itself and so on. And these are things that will be primarily missing from this story. So it's hard to see how it can be live up to something like what it's inspired by. I do wonder if the only way it could be maybe strengthened in that regard is if you set it a bit earlier, or it begins earlier with Gollum losing the ring to Bilbo and his reaction to that, and like the utter despair he goes through, and then his hunt for Bilbo is part of the film, And so you see him go off on his adventure, essentially getting kidnapped to Mordor. He has to wrestle with Shelob and all this kind of thing. So you might get more of a story if you focus on Gollum and his kind of utter despair and desire for the ring. That might be compelling. But okay. I don't know. I can't see it being a strong story.
My concern is, can Gollum even hold the attention of a movie audience for a full movie? I've never thought of Gollum as a character that I just want to see, or I want to like you get his full story in Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Like, there's not much more important things that happen to him, and even Tolkien just kind of sort of tells you in a few sentences what happened. Like, even he doesn't seem to think that it needs a lot more going into.
I think that's fair, and you're right in the sense as well that because we have the character of Gollum already kind of fully formed in these two works, and there isn't really much room for development or growth, whatever interaction he has, he's not going to change.
Yeah.
Right, he's not going to be redeemed or anything like that. Now, I'm not saying a character has to be redeemed, but there has to be the possibility of going one like different ways, right, as a character. And you can't really do that with him because he has to be kind of so totally enslaved by the ring and only find possible redemption with Frodo's kind of pity for him. But so you can't have that happening before, or it cheapens that. In saying that, though, you know, filmmakers these days aren't too worried about cheapening other films, right? Mm-hmm. But it is Serkis and Jackson and co. So they have an interest in not destroying their own legacy. So I think maybe we can. It might not be a Rian Johnson at the very least attempt.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're trying to destroy anything. It just seems like a grasping at straws, maybe. But I want to know more, like, based on this movie title, why wasn't the pitch, or maybe they did this pitch, but or maybe they thought about it, but, like, why did they not do, say, a Thorongil movie with Aragorn?
Like, that would have been cool.
Like, how is that not a more exciting story possibility? Like,
go ahead, Connor. Sorry.
Well, it could be sort of a Band of Brothers, Lord of the Rings sort of style movie, and you have the battles, you have sort of the relationship with Ecthelion, who we know some basics of character, and he's kind of a better version of Denethor, and we can see Denethor as a kid or as young, where he gets his problems, where he gets his jealousies.
Yeah.
To me, there's more character development that you could do in Gondor, because in the movies, in the Lord of the Rings movies, we don't actually get Gondor characterized. Gondor is just a place where events take place, where battles take place, and the people aren't really given anything to do character-wise, except for maybe Denethor. We don't get any of the side characters developed, so we could kind of do that in a way in this sort of through the eyes of Aragorn and his adventure. I don't know. It just seems to be much more of an interesting story.
I think that would be quite interesting. And just on your point about Gondor, I think it's really astute. And it's just Minas Tirith, isn't it? Whereas if you've read the books, there's this whole swathe of Gondor that's totally missing, and all these wonderful kind of regional Gondorians who have their own traditions and customs. You've got like basically like Scotsmen coming, for example, from Lossarnach, right? And then you've got the Knights of Dalamoroth, which have these beautiful swan feather helmets. So you could really embrace that and kind of explore kind of some of the relationships going on in there and the proud traditions and so on. And also then the men who are against them. So like the Dunlings, for example, we see very little of in the films. We just see, I think there's that one great scene where Saruman's in the middle of them. It's like, go and kill Rohan. And they're all like, charge off. But there's probably like some very interesting stories you could tell about them and the men of the East in relation to Gondor and Rohan and so on, and the fighting, not necessarily humanizing, because I think Hollywood has a tendency to try and make us sympathize with villains, but rather giving them just like motivations and understanding a bit of their world. And even if they have some of the men are wicked, right? Like, who are these people who serve Sauron? Why are they serving Sauron, or why do they hate the Rohirrim, for example? So I think you could do a lot there. There's a lot of material that you could explore, which would be from the books, right?
Yeah.
But I think in answer to your question, like, why not that? I think the thing is with this is it's going to try and it's the first film, major film, I guess, in this kind of sequence. They've promised to kind of produce many or several, and it's like the hook. It's like, okay, here's the one that people who don't know the stories that well, or have maybe only seen the films, might come and watch because it's characters they know.
But Aragorn, you have Aragorn right there.
Yeah. So you'd have one character, but would you be able to get the rest in? Whereas, like, if it's in Mirkwood, you've got Legolas, you've got Gollum, you've probably got Gandalf. So you've already got like a fair number of the Fellowship back.
They'll probably have Radagast as well.
Oh no. sorry.
No, it's fine. They did a pretty weird job with him.
Galadriel perhaps as well. You could get Galadriel back somehow.
Well, she does. The Lothlorien elves basically deliver the message, or tell Elrond or something that Gollum has been captured or something.
Okay, right. So they could feature as well. But I think you're right. You could be bolder and maybe still have some of these characters and make a much more compelling story than the one that we'll probably get with the Hunt for Gollum.
Yeah. Well, with like a battle with Umbar, you know, that that Aragorn goes on as Thorongil, you could basically have a rivalry, or you could go into the rivalry between the Numenoreans and the Black Numenoreans.
Yes.
Because that's where the remnants of Black Numenoreans still live, at least theoretically. And they could be serious contenders and necessary to be defeated in order for Aragorn to come to the throne in the future. And I think a lot of people want to know we know things from the books and from the Silmarillion, but we've never seen Black Numenoreans really depicted well. We see it sort of in the Rings of Power show, which you have not seen, right?
No, I've not seen any of it, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, don't be too afraid. You should be afraid. You should be afraid of it, because it's hot garbage. $1 billion of garbage.
It's amazing what people will spend their money on, right? I think you're right, and you could do some. I think there's two things you could do with that as well. So, like, the Black Numenoreans, you could have this sense from some of them that they are the true heirs to Numenor, and in some ways, like, they were much more in continuity with Numenor than Elendil and his sons, who were, faithful to the Valar and were thus spared, right? So the Black Numenoreans, in a sense, maintain that kind of domination and conquest of these lands. And so they might see themselves as true heirs and purer of blood, because of course the line of kings has ended. So you could have something on that kind of front, you know, we are the true Numenoreans, so a kind of supremacy. Numenorean supremacy, let's go with that.
Which nowadays I think they'd really you know, be interested in. The problem is they tend to make the heroes into the villains, or they try and then try and make the villains sympathetic.
Yeah, so it wouldn't work, right? It would have to be Thorongil who's the supremacist.
Well, do you think the diversity will be maintained? Do you think you know, because we'll probably see Gondor, we'll probably see Lothlorien, Rohan, Mirkwood in this at least some of those areas. Do you think they will be all sort of diverse areas, just like modern countries these days?
That's a really good question. It's difficult to say, in part because obviously the original films and The Hobbit wasn't diverse, and Jackson oversaw that, right? So you might think that, but those were released at the very early stages of you know, diversity initiatives, and the world has changed a lot since that point, and most institutions nowadays do push diversity in a very strong way, including Hollywood, and Warner Brothers are no exception to that. So I find it difficult to know, because if they're looking at continuity with the previous films, then you're probably not going to see like Mirkwood elves who are black or Asian, because they were trying to follow a certain aesthetic, a kind of Northern European. You might, if you followed what you were saying though, in terms of like, oh, let's have like pirates from Umbar, then you would have a great opportunity for casting a diversely, because these are people from a southern continent, right? And the men of the east, like Khand and Rune, these are supposed to be like equivalent to Asian countries. So you could have actually had a really easy way to work in diversity, which was consistent with Tolkien's world. I fear though that we're probably going to get a more diverse, if not the elves, then maybe like Gondor. And I think it could work. I think it's not inherently that but I don't think it's like, oh, Gondor's like just like purely Gondorian, right? You're probably going to get a Minas Tirith, a whole range of people. You know, there's traders and so on. But the idea that this is a population which is totally diverse or multi-ethnic or something like that wouldn't fit with the film or the books.
Well, we can't really see Minas Tirith, right? Because if we're looking at from Aragorn's perspective, at least, I mean, we might have might go in to see Denethor and his family and stuff like that. But if it's focused on Aragorn solely, he can't go into Minas Tirith, right?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
So he would have to be out in the you know, neighboring villages or towns and stuff like that. But the problem is with the diversity elements, it's not like you can have a diversity, right? Like you can have people of different interests, different sort of, as you said, sort of one group of them is basically Scotsmen, you know, sort right. of you have this internal diversity of Gondor, but it's just, it doesn't make sense for it to be ethnically diverse, because the Gondorians, the Numenoreans, just came and they intermarried with the Northmen, I think. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really make a lot of sense. And people, especially back in those days, were much more, or in medieval sort of structures, societies are very concerned with people from the outside coming in.
Yes.
So they wouldn't necessarily be welcoming to too many traders. You could see a few or something, but you know, a lot of them are also enemies. A lot of the people right. to the south are enemies. So, you know, I imagine there's concerns about spies.
Well, and also from the Southerners' perspective, those who aren't Black Numenoreans, they will have a narrative of, oh, Numenor and Gondor enslaved us and conquered us. And so these Gondorians, you know, they're our oppressors, to put it in a kind of modern kind of language. So they're going to have quite a resentment against Gondor. Actually, you could say again, if you really wanted to kind of tap into current cycles, that would be a really easy story.
Problem is the people who are virtuous are the people that they thought or they think are oppressing them.
Yes, yes. Well, that's so the problem. You could tell the story, though. You could at least show that some of the motivation with this sort of narrative. Because we kind of get it with the Dunlings as well and the Wildmen. Like, at the end of the Battle of Helm's Deep, they're all surprised that the Rohirrim don't just kind of sacrifice them and burn them alive and so on. It might even be not eat them, I'm not sure, because Saruman had told them that the Rohirrim, like, ate their enemies. And like cannibalize them, and so they're shocked by this. So you could easily see it, like, okay, these people have been lied to about the Gondorians. Let's say, like, you've had the equivalent of race baiters in Harad, who want to stir up resentment against Gondor. And so they've been telling lies about the Gondorians and what they've done to Harad. You could easily tell that kind of story. And I think it'd be quite effective as a kind of motivation for why these men are going. Not all of them are, like, getting power from Sauron. A lot of them are just ordinary guys. But maybe they really feel this kind of, okay, Gondor is keeping us back. We need to destroy it. It'd be an interesting social critique of today as well, but I'm not sure if anybody in Hollywood would be brave enough to do that at the moment.
Well, you could also do sort of paint the Black Numenoreans as basically slave masters.
Yes.
Over the Southerners. So, you know, you could have a sort of liberator story along with Aragorn's destruction of the Umbarian pirates.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. I think you should be writing the next film, Connor.
Well, if anything, both of us should. I think we'd work well as a duo. I mean, maybe you could do it by yourself, but I don't think I could do it by myself, at least not now.
We'll assemble a council.
Well, I don't know if we want that. I don't know if we want a council. This. Maybe AM could join, but
there must be nine.
I think that's what Jerry Seinfeld's been complaining about regarding a comedy. The nine have come and have determined your joke is offensive and shall not be used.
yes, but it matches with the Fellowship, right? So nine might be symbolically good. I had another idea for a film on this. I mean, there's so many, right? In a way, I guess, even just going down this route that you've just spoken about, there's a lot of different films you could tell in this world, which would bring something quite new and different and have a lot of depth to them that you can push into, a lot of richness. I'll just name a couple, like The Fall of Arnor in the North.
Yeah.
That would be really excellent to see. It'd be very epic. There's not much about it, if anything at all, really, in the films themselves. I think there's like a throwaway line about Weathertop, for example. So you could really go into that and it'd be a great tragedy. And there'd be something very new for an audience. There's Hobbits too. Hobbits with bows, right? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be great? And also, like, gives the Witch King maybe a bit more, shows his power, because I think in the films you see him kind of mess up Theoden, but that's about it.
He does. In the... uh, in the extended version, he breaks Gandalf's staff, which
that's right
is a bit of a continuity problem, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can see why they didn't have that in the theater edition, the theatrical edition. But having him destroy like a country, that would be really powerful to see. And then it makes you think when you see the Battle of the Pelennor Fields again, okay, this is a serious character here that's come. And so Eowyn's and Merry's kind of actions have even more weight to them. So that could even bolster the film. Maybe another one could be, you know, Eorl the Young and the foundation of Rohan and the kind of friendship between Gondor and Rohan being forged. That could be quite powerful. And again, kind of gives a strength and weight to what happens in the Return of the King. Another could be like Balin trying to reclaim Moria. And the initial successes, but then the tragedy that strikes, you know, towards the end. But my personal choice would be The Shire, right? Not just a documentary of The Shire, although that would be cool.
A documentary?
But a from, like, Bilbo's party, a film about what happens to The Shire, eventually culminating in the scouring of The Shire, right? That's something we don't get in any of the films. It's only kind of alluded to in the Mirror of Galadriel scene, but it's something that they cut. So you could have this great dystopian film of like Lotho, you know, starting to build his little empire, bossing people around, destroying the place. Then the ruffians start coming in, the rules start growing. It's a bit like 1984. There's kind of corporatism mixed with socialism happening, and then like Sharky arrives and there's cutting down of trees and worm tongues committing cannibalism in Bag End, and then you know, the four hobbits return and lead the resistance and overturn this terrible situation. I think you could make something truly incredible out of the scouring of the Shire. And the hobbits are so great, like Farmer Cotton, you've got Lobelia Sackville Baggins, you've got Fatty Bulger, he led the resistance initially, right? He gets thrown in jail. You have and you could explore some of like the variation within the hobbits, so they're not all the same. There's the Tooks, right? They have their halls and so on, the Brandy Bucks. You could really get into it, like I think there's something there, and it would tie into the films, but it adds something completely new to the Jackson universe, you might say.
It just sounds like it should be a TV show, and it should basically be Downton Abbey in Middle Earth, basically.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, that's it on the head, yeah.
Plus cannibalism.
just one instance, don't worry.
Instead of World War I happening, the scouring of the Shire and it turning into like a dystopian.
Well, I mean, in some ways, I don't know if you've felt this when you read the books, Connor, but to me that was the most powerful thing, like, or one of the most powerful things was this realization that this place of warmth and safety, that the home, the beautiful place of the Shire, even there could be so maliciously kind of turned on its head. That is more horrifying to me than anything Sauron does in the whole thing. Like, maybe not what he does in Numenor, but certainly in The Lord of the Rings, like that to me is gut-wrenching in a way that nothing else really hits. So can you imagine that on screen, like seeing these hobbits enslaved and emaciated and unhappy? I mean, it'd be awful, right?
And then you could see the, like, basically their hobbit knights, you know, the Pippin and Merry and Sam and Frodo, you know, coming to their rescue. I mean, they were all dressed up like they could have come to save the Shire in the movies, but just nothing happened. They were just kind of looked at like, how dare you go somewhere? And, you know, it kind of, it pays off. The whole thing is that they, you know, they've been looked upon poorly for, or they're looked upon poorly for leaving, going on adventure, but mm-hmm. they come back and save everyone. And you could actually, you could see Pippin become the next Took, or yes. The head of the Took family, and Mary become the next mayor, not mayor. What is it? What's his role? What? Who's the master of Buckland?
Master of Buckland, and Sam becomes the mayor.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get these beautiful moments of the rebuilding of the Shire as well. So Sam planting the Malorn tree to replace the party tree. You have, you know, all the, it becomes even better and more beautiful, and so on. So it's quite a beautiful story and power, like, of renewal of the Shire and actually improving it. It wouldn't, if it, Tolkien has this kind of dynamic on a macro scale, on a mic and on a micro, of kind of, so things start out good, then evil enters, and it looks like it's going to be irredeemable, but then there's redemption. And actually, if there hadn't been suffering and this evil, we couldn't have got to this even higher place. It's very Christian idea. It's built on kind of the theology of Ambrose and Augustine, this idea of the Felix culpa, the happy fault of Adam and Eve. You know, this, the original sin means that we need a redeemer. And so we have now a world which Christ has redeemed. And so the new heaven and the new earth, which is superior to the original paradise, is made possible. And so in a way, the scouring of the Shire, though awful, allows for something greater to be created. And I think that's seen in the books. The Shire becomes a more fruitful place, but also more engaged with the world, and you see, like, the beginning of libraries, for example. And I mean, of course, the academic Tolkien thought the creation of libraries was, you know, what was missing in the Shire. but, you know, it's that kind of thing. There's a maturity now to the hobbits, which there was a kind of almost pettiness to some of their behavior in terms of, oh, you know, those Frodo's parents, you know, going out on the water, how queer is that, you know, all this kind of stuff. They didn't have the right perspective in a way. I realize we've gone far off from the hunt for Gollum.
This is perfect for this. You've convinced me that this is a TV show or a movie that we need to have. I really, when you first said it, I was like, really? How? I mean, you know, it's a nice little read, but could it be its own movie? I don't know. And then you've convinced me.
Well, think of just all the politics of the Shire as well. Like, I want to see Lobelia Sackville Baggins get a hand on Bag End.
you want to see a Karen take over?
Oh yeah. I mean, she's definitely doing that, isn't she? And you know, Farmer Maggot, and maybe he can have a spin-off show with Tom Bombadil. Having their conversations, right?
Now, what about a Last King of Gondor story? I can't remember what his name is, the one that goes off and, you know, confronts the Witch King and is never seen again. But there was a lot of hope. I can't remember the exact details. But there was a lot of hope that he might take up the throne of Arnor, and he had just saved Arnor previously, and then his death basically solidified the destruction of Arnor, because no one was going to be coming to help them, as well as the beginning of the reign of the Stewards, which was going to oversee the decline of Gondor. I think that could be an interesting story as well.
I think that would be a great like through line, I guess, to the fall of Arnor. That would be, and connecting it with Gondor in that way. Yeah, that would be great. And kind of very much building on that northern courage idea that's so strong to Tolkien. You know, this king riding into maybe impossible odds, but nonetheless does it because it's the right thing to do.
In this one, isn't it a foolish thing? Isn't it known to be foolish?
Okay.
Because the steward is basically trying to convince him, like holds him back the first time, and then the Witch King basically taunts him again to come out.
Yeah, so I've got it here. It's I think it's Eärnor the king. He becomes king of Gondor in 2043. He is challenged by the Witch King. In 2050, the challenge is renewed. Eärnor rides to Minas Morgul and is lost. Mardil becomes the first ruling steward. So yeah, it doesn't sound like it was the right thing to do then. It sounds like it was a foolish thing that Tolkien would have seen as actually more like... So he has this essay, Offer Mode, and it's almost like the bad side of Northern Courage, which is kind of interesting. He says, like, because it's virtuous, men seek that virtue for them, or the glory associated with the virtue for themselves. Mm. And so they, in Saxon literature, you find several characters like Beowulf, like Byrhtnoth, who was a Saxon commander at the Battle of Maldon. They put themselves in dangerous situations which they could avoid because it's glorious, like, to be in that more dangerous situation and face it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and Tolkien's like, actually, this is pride and it's not virtuous, but it's the problem with Northern Courage, is it encourages people to act like this in sometimes. So you could see him maybe as guilty of that characteristic, because he's meeting the challenge, right? He's doing what a good Anglo-Saxon warrior would do, which is, you know, you never turn down the challenge. You've got to show your bravery and so on, even if it's not the wisest course of action. So yeah, no, I take it back. It's not an example of Northern Courage. it's the exact opposite. But that would be interesting, because we don't really get that in The Lord of the Rings so much. Only Denethor sending Faramir out would be close to that.
We've sort of set it up that sort of this trilogy, I feel like there's a trilogy here that we've discussed, sort of relating to the kings of Arnor, Gondor, how we can tie them together. Mm. Or, you know, it could be like the first one could be the destruction of Arnor. The second movie could be the fall of the House of Kings, or the last king of Gondor. And then the third movie could be Aragorn's story with the Pirates of Umbar.
That's great. That's great.
See, yeah. We have a trilogy for you, Peter Jackson. Why did you pick The Hunt for Gollum?
The Hunt for Gollum, yeah.
Like, there's just not that much action or, like, even, like, obvious amount of adventure that would necessarily come from The Hunt for Gollum.
No.
And there, no. Like, how much, like, there's not, like, what are you going to talk about? What's the dialogue going to be? Like, there's got to be something interesting about what they're going through. Like, is it going to be between Aragorn and Gandalf? Is Aragorn going to be with, like, Halbarad? Like, his, his other rangers, like he can't go on this quest completely and utterly by himself. I think that would be kind of boring.
No, I agree with you. And especially the dialogue between Aragorn and Gollum would be pretty poor as well. It's
Has he ever talked to him in the movies? Like,
they don't have any screen time together. The book basically just says Aragorn was pleased to be rid of Gollum when he gets to Mirkwood because he stank and all he did was bite and scratch him. like they didn't have like meaningful conversation, right, or anything like that, or even on the level of like Sam and Gollum, like, because that's entertaining, right? There's it's funny at points, it's also tragic at points. No, it's not like that, and that's not the character of Aragorn, is it? No. As well, like Sam has that kind of simple wisdom, which allows him to kind of have a certain joviality as well, that works with Gollum quite well. Like they're almost like a double act in the Two Towers. You know, that great scene about potatoes, right? it's like lived on. But Aragorn's quite a serious character.
He's high above this. This is not his, like he's doing something that's far below his station.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, I'd watch it if it was like Gimli went hunting for Gollum. That would be fun.
How would that make sense?
It wouldn't make any sense, but it'd be quite entertaining, I imagine.
It would just be a comedy.
Gimli would be, you know, imagine all the quips he would have as he's going through the marshes.
That's, you know, that's something. And then he'll just fall, but he'll fall over too. Like he'll get stuck places. Gollum's just gonna let him go. Like, you know, just escape.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
I mean, it's like Gimli having a really terrible puppy.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's what it'd be like.
He's just going to like drag him around, and Gimli doesn't really have a good relationship with like living things.
Good point.
Like he's a dwarf. It would be terrible.
But I feel like there'd be more comedy out of this situation.
I feel like there's 5 minutes of comedy. It's like he catches him, he like starts to like wrangle him, Gollum bites his hand or something, and then Gollum runs off and like drags Gimli a little bit, and then Gimli falls on his face and yeah. loses him again. Like that's my scene. I want to see that animated with some with AI voices of the characters. That'd be kind of funny.
This is the danger is, though, if it's a fan film, it might be struck off before the release of this film, right? Because that's one of the side stories to do with the hunt for Gollum.
Gimli?
No, I don't know if you saw this, but so there's a fan film called The Hunt for Gollum.
Yes, I did see. I didn't watch it, but I did hear it got struck. But then I think it got unstruck, didn't it?
Yeah, so that's right. But there was a lot, in part because there was a lot of backlash.
Yes.
This had been on YouTube for 15 years. Hadn't made a profit. You know, it was for no money. Mm-hmm. Just people who love The Lord of the Rings made this film. And on the same day that The Hunt for Gollum gets announced, Warner Brothers sends a copyright strike against this film. Lots of people were really upset about it, and so they reversed the decision. You know, the greed of these great powerful film companies, probably not congruent with the spirit of Tolkien in many ways, and many Tolkien fans were very upset.
Well, also the fact that it like, how can you copyright something that's been up for so long of something you didn't like, you hadn't made? Like there was no possibility at the time of it being made, right, as like a legitimate movie, and suddenly you're copy striking this. Anyways,
It was a shame, but yeah, so we need to be careful about animating our Gimli captures Gollum escapades. Who knows what Jackson will do to it.
Maybe put it on Rumble.
Okay, that's fine then.
Okay.
You won't look there.
Now, kind of bizarrely, the Rings of Power trailer was released, or teaser trailer, not even a full trailer, like it's only a minute and 30 seconds, was released today. Like a little less than a week after the announcement of this hunt for Gollum. like, we didn't really know whether or not this, whether or not Rings of Power would have a second season. I mean, we knew it was in the works, but we had no signs outside of that up until just today. And suddenly it's like, Peter Jackson comes out with something about Lord of the Rings. Oh, we need to make sure people know that we are still doing something.
So, you've seen the first season of The Rings of Power, right?
Yeah, I did a review show. I reviewed almost every episode, and it was just a waste of time.
Yeah, well, that's right, because all my knowledge of The Rings of Power came from watching your review, your reviews of it. So I don't know any more than what you said on there about it.
Basically, they tried to ship Galadriel and Sauron in order to make his betrayal more emotional or something.
Sorry, that's just really funny. Like, also, when you put it like that, like, what? Who came up with this?
And they had to get rid of her husband. Like, her husband had to be written out of the show.
Poor Celebrimbor. What did he ever do?
You mean Celeborn? Celebrimbor, actually, like...
Oh, yeah, Celeborn, sorry.
Celebrimbor is in the show, but he actually is supposed to have, like, a flirtatious relationship with her, I think.
Oh, okay.
And none of that happens because he's, like, 50, and, like, he's played by a guy who's 50, and she's, like, a, like, 20-something. So that would be really creepy, even though she's, of course, like, much older than Celebrimbor in the narrative. She's like, she's played by this 20-something actress who you could, like, there's no way you could believe that she was some warrior princess. And that's what they want her to be. They want her to be a warrior princess, which, I mean, I always thought most of, especially elvish women, their power wasn't necessarily with the sword in Tolkien's work, but more with magic.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And, he mentions Galadriel's power, but I've never imagined that as really a physical. Like, I mean, she's strong because she's tall, even though this lady who plays her is really short, which is also weird. Like, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. But
others have made this point. They have think of power purely in masculine terms. So they think, oh, to be powerful is to wield a sword. That's one form of power. But what you're alluding to, and Tolkien understood this, is that actually there's different kinds of power. Not different kinds of masculine power, for example. So I wouldn't say Gandalf's primary power is with the sword either. But there's also feminine kinds of power, which like Galadriel, she makes things grow. That's part of her power. She's in tune with nature, and you see that with Lothlorien itself, and that's quite a maternal kind of power. And she is a motherly figure in the Lord of the Rings. Or sort of, she's almost like the Virgin Mary in some ways in the Lord of the Rings. Obviously, this is prior to that. Yeah. The Rings of Power, she has other powers as well. But my point is, it doesn't have to be through force that one has power, right?
Yeah.
And they can't conceive of anything else.
Well, even, you know, I think it's in the appendices about the destruction of Dol Guldur. Galadriel brings down the tower of Gol-Gadur. I can't say that. But I don't imagine that she was pulling it down brick by brick.
Right. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I'm pretty sure she was probably standing, you know, using some sort of elven magic and using her powers, her inner powers, her powers of knowledge and wisdom and such to destroy the fortress.
I think so. And in some ways you could see that as in being in line with Iluvatar's power, which brings about the destruction of Numenor. It's not like Iluvatar turned up and physically drag Numenor to the yeah. bottom of the ocean, he commanded it, as it were, and it happened. And so she is in some ways more in tune with that than, say, a warrior who physically would destroy the tower.
Well, I think I need to do a bit of torturing. So I think we need to watch this trailer,
okay.
This teaser, and you can just tell me. I want to know what you think of it because it came out today. Like it mm-hmm. we planned this. We had no idea that it was going to come out today, and it does. It came out today. So I think we need to watch it, and it's really short anyways, so it's not like not too bad of torture, I guess.
You're not selling it to me. Here we go.
Okay.
An evil, ancient and powerful, has returned.
Prepare yourselves.
A worm is his way inside your mind. A crest of him slithers in.
I think he has been here. I think he's been here among us all along.
Every soul in Middle-earth is in peril.
Okay. Thoughts?
Oh, well, I mean, I find it interesting, like, the actual narration, like, that would hook me, the actual story of Sauron, you know, and his attempts to, conquer Middle-earth during that period, right? And initially it's through deception with the elves and with Numenoreans in different ways and at different times, so you could maybe kind of compress it together. So I'm thinking of like that story, right? But the images on the screen don't entice me at all. Like, as soon as I think maybe there was like one or two that I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, but in general it felt to me like it lacks heart, and the actual story isn't reflected in the visuals being shown. Now, of course, it's a teaser, but I just mean it didn't feel to me like anywhere close to the story it's trying to imitate. It felt more like how would you put it? This might be the wrong way to put it, but I feel like there's a kind of Dungeons and Dragons-ification of fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a party goes off and does a quest, and it's very enjoyable, but you wouldn't say it's like, oh, an epic story with kind of serious morality in it, although there can be, because it's primarily a bit of fun and people play silly parts and so on. There's a superficiality, I guess, and to me that's how that came across. It's superficial. It has the aesthetics, but it doesn't have the depth behind it.
I would say artificial also.
Artificial, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
It doesn't feel authentic. And you're right, it does feel like sort of just you threw a bunch of people because of whoever you have with you at the time during a game, you know, into a quest. Mm-hmm. But they don't necessarily need to be there. They're not intrinsically important to the story necessarily. They're just there because you need more bodies.
Yeah. I definitely thought that there was that moment in particular where I think it's Galadriel, the blonde lady, right? And there's a bunch of them in like a circle.
Yeah.
And they're like drawing their swords, but they're like twirling them as well. And it all felt a bit kind of put on. Like it didn't feel like they were really like ready for battle or one something of them, serious was coming.
One of them with her was Elrond.
Oh, okay, right.
Like, and he's like this sort of like pathetic, poorly barely masculine, like elf with like really short hair.
Right. Okay.
Like, he doesn't even have the long hair, and then you have Sauron, who's wearing sort of an elf wig, basically. I don't know if you noticed that, but
yeah,
they're talking about it as if they don't know who he is. Like Galadriel in the last season met him and figured out that he was him. So it's basically the way it makes it sound like in some of the comments in the comment section were saying this, like, oh, he wore a wig and now you can't tell that that's him. Like you just spent a bunch of time with him and now he wears a wig and now you're fooled. Like it seems like they're almost trying to go backwards on what they set up. Because it was so bad.
Well, because it would be more compelling if they still didn't know. But if she already knows, that kind of undermines that whole story arc.
It undermines the entire first season. It's like the first season didn't exist.
Well, it's maybe like, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, but the first season did exist. You can't take that away. You really can't.
Because, like, the story, they don't know. She has suspicions about the character who Sauron has kind of adopted, right? The I can't remember his name. It's like Annatar. That's right. The giver of gifts and so on. She suspects him, but she doesn't know it's Sauron. She's wary of this character and feels like there's something bad going on here. And thus kind of splits with Celebrimbor and those elves who are working with
Annatar.
And that's part of their migration, right, to Lothlorien. So there is that element, but if she already knows, it kind of undermines that even further, because Celebrimbor would know who Sauron is, right? It's not like he would hear the name and be like, oh yeah, that's fine. Like these, the elves, the Noldor, had a pretty serious war with Morgoth and Sauron. Like they would remember what happened. They would remember the absolute animosity between these two. It just seems kind of ludicrous.
Well, and the whole put
it that way, yeah.
And the whole plot of the previous like season was she thinks Sauron. Like she blames Sauron for I think it's Finrod's death, which of course he kills Finrod, and she is out to find him, like she's hunting him, but nobody believes her that he's still out there, and she's leading expeditions, and you know, and then they want to send her back to Valinor on a ship, and then in transit, in the middle of the ocean, she leaps out of the ship, you know, and suddenly, and then finds a shipwreck in which sort of a monster is, you know, trying to eat them. And she runs into this guy who's definitely not Sauron. and they sort of become buddies, and then they get picked up by Numenorean ships. And it's and Elendil's the one that picks him up, and he tells the queen the reason that he brought her back was because the sea is always right, and the sea brought Galadriel to him. So the sea is always right, so I had to bring her to Numenor. including definitely not Sauron. And also, not to mention, I think Elendil's, like, I think Elendil's wife drowned. Like, that's how she died.
Okay, yeah.
So it's hilarious that he's like, the sea is always right, even though my wife was killed by the sea.
And then also, he's saving Sauron from the sea as well.
Exactly. So the sea's definitely right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're trying to tap into like Olmo, right? Olmo's or usually got the right ideas.
They don't trust. Who's the Olmo has a subordinate
who's pretty wild, right? And stirs up storms and so on.
And they don't trust him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's part of the thing is they're not they don't trust him. So obviously they can't really fully trust the sea.
Mm-hmm.
They can trust like rivers. Rivers are very trustworthy because that's not where the untrustworthy guy's power lies.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, the whole point is it's a complete misunderstanding. It just sounds like, and this happened, and this happened. Ooh, what if that happened? Like, it's just like people throwing out ideas. Like, how can we get more people involved?
I mean, I can't. What really shocked me in what you said there actually was the idea of Galadriel being allowed back into Valinor, never mind being sent back. Like, that to me is the biggest kind of red flag, because it's like, you know, the curse of the Noldor. It's such a huge thing. It drives the plot of the Silmarillion in many ways, and the kind of estrangement of the Valar from the Noldor is critical to understanding. Okay, the destruction that they face, and then with the eventual redemption supplied by Edendil, you know, when he manages to cross the sea to Valinor. It's this kind of miraculous thing made possible by the Silmaril, perhaps by kind of providence, and then the nobility of his cause. So to kind of say, oh yeah, Galadriel could have just been sent back to Valinor, totally undercuts like the seriousness of the situation the Noldor find themselves in, and Middle Earth more broadly.
And not just them, and you know, of course, broadly, yes, but also the Numenoreans aren't supposed to go west. So, yes. One of my questions sort of during it was, but if they were really close to getting to Valinor when she jumped off, how would the Numenoreans even have gotten to them if they can't sail west?
Hmm.
Gil-galad is the one who's basically ordering her to like leave. And one of the things that all the Noldor there would understand would be that none of them can go back.
Right.
Or none of them want to go back. So why would they want to send Galadriel back? The way they play it is if they're just annoyed by her desire to hunt down Sauron and that she's basically, basically warmongering, and we need to get rid of her because Sauron's totally gone, bro.
Right. Okay. That doesn't make much sense.
See,
definitely not Gil-galad. Like he's pretty suspicious of Annatar as well.
But this is not even Annatar doesn't really exist in this show, at least
until
now. Like season two, it sounds like they're going to try and like bring Annatar in maybe as another version of Sauron to try and to be able to do it so that they can be like, oh no, this is a different guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand how Galadriel wouldn't know. He looks the same. He just wears a wig.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that the point is that the contrast of sort of the capabilities of sort of a Rings of Power versus a Hunt for Gollum by Warner Brothers, produced by Peter Jackson and his friends. Now, like, should we be somewhat confident that this is going to be a good movie? The Peter Jackson one compared to the ugliness of Rings of Power.
See, this is interesting, because what struck me when we were talking about that trailer is we were probably more animated than we were about The Hunt for Gollum. And it's kind of going back to what we were saying. Although The Rings of Power is an absolute travesty, it's actually dealing with a very rich story. And that's partly why it makes us so animated, because we know it could be so amazing. We know it could be wonderful, and they've not just made mistakes, they've trashed it in various ways. The Hunt for Gollum, it almost feels to me a bit like it might be okay, but I'm not like invested in it being a great success. I don't feel, if it doesn't work, it doesn't really bother me too much in a way that The Rings of Power does. And so I think that's quite telling, like the level of the story. And so it determines the kind of reaction. So in my view, I don't think it will be as bad as The Rings of Power. But I also don't think I think there's a hard limit on how good it can be just by the nature of the story itself. But I guess the only thing I would say is we don't know yet what exactly they'll focus on. It might be a lot broader than we're thinking in terms of The Hunt for Gollum. If so, it might be a really good movie. But if it is really just The Hunt for Gollum plus a load of kind of added bits like The Hobbit was, then I wouldn't be too hopeful. But not in the way that The Rings of Power did it. I think it would be more just because boring. It was bloated. Boring and bloated, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think it's just a safe choice. I think they're being like, the reason we can't be animated about this, you bring it up, but the fact that there's not much in the story, or it's not that close to anybody's hearts or anything like that, we don't really have a stake in this movie too much, is a way for them to sort of put a toe into the water in a more safe way than the way they saw The Rings of Power, which was sort of a leap into the sea, and they basically drowned.
Literally a leap into the sea, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they definitely drowned. And this, they're hoping to just dip their toe in, and maybe what they're trying to see is if they can do it well, maybe we could do something more ambitious for the future.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis, and quite perceptive that it's responding to the Rings of Power's kind of experience. I guess, though, maybe one thing that I would have thought should have played a role in this kind of discussion is that I don't know if you've seen the Gollum PlayStation game or video game, right?
I did.
Have you come across this? So I haven't played it, but I've seen playthroughs. It was an absolute disaster. Firstly, the game was broken in many ways. It had a number of bugs. The actual stuff you did in the game was pretty not fun.
Yeah.
It was boring, repetitive, not very challenging. But also the story was pretty rubbish. And it kind of followed Gollum's time in Mordor. And it just struck a number of people. Like, there really wasn't that much that was interesting in the story as well as the game. And the problem is because of the character, essentially. Like, he's not a great fighter. Although you could do something interesting with it, but he's not a great fighter. So you're not going to have, like, a hack and slash him game.
Yeah.
There's not that much going on. And we know what's going to happen anyway. Like, this is a very 2D prequel to the Lord of the Rings. So the fact that game tanked so heavily made me think, well, actually, why, like, they haven't kind of been put off by that at all.
That, yeah, that is a bit strange. Now, with something like that, especially if you're like exploring Mordor, which I don't know much about the game, but if you were exploring some place that Tolkien didn't really go into much depth on, or, you know, spent, well, I mean, he spent some time in there, but it just, there's not much to go off on Mordor. It's not like there's as many races or peoples, or, you know, it's supposed to be sort of, you know, almost like a black desert, in some sense, desert, fiery desert with like, you know, not much, there's not much there, but if you need somebody with some creativity to add things to the location you're going to be part like in, if you're just if you're just going to spend the whole time in Mordor, you have to expand what Mordor is, and you have to have the creativity to do so. And if you don't, it's going to be flat, and that seems like what it was.
Definitely, and a video game series which actually did a good job in that respect is Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War, which like, they just embrace the fact that they're not going to follow the proper lore, right? So if you play those games, you just have to accept that as part of it. But what they do actually do in terms of Mordor is they say, okay, we've got the bit that Frodo and Sam went through, the Black Desert, as you were saying. But then there's also like the Lake of Nern and the slave fields down there. And that part of Mordor is different. It's a bit more fertile, and that's where a lot of the food comes from. So we're going to have a part of the game there, for example. I would also say as well that the gameplay was a lot better in that, but that's because it's a kind of hack and slash them.
Yeah, because it's like a power, a power game. It's a thrill, you know. Instead of, you know, you're put in charge of basically orcs, armies of orcs,
right? Yeah.
Instead of you know, Gollum, which Gollum can't do much. Gollum is basically a hobbit.
Yes.
It's like if there are plenty of games that did really badly that were like hobbit games.
That's true. Yeah. Well, the original Fellowship of the Ring game wasn't very good from what I remember, but then when the 2000 Return of the King games came out on PS2, they were a big step up.
Well, yeah, because things happen that like require like excitement and fighting, and you know, that's what people want to do in a game. They don't want to cross the Shire in a video game necessarily.
What? You mean you don't want my Shire documentary?
No, in a video game. Would you want a video game of that?
No.
Yeah, I could see a movie about it, but that's because one of the main aspects of a movie is dialogue that you're really enjoying, and you know, you're not in control of the people. You're just the obvious differences, of course.
Shire Simulator 2024.
It's not going to be a good game.
Somebody make it.
Well, you could do that on Minecraft, maybe.
Yeah. That would be good. And you could have like, you know, various things to do, like growing your pipe weed and
potatoes,
going to the green dragon. It would be good. It would be good.
You just want to live in the Shire.
yes, that is the truth. Yeah, really,
I think what you're really meaning is just we need to deport the people that make the Shire not exist for us now. We need to get rid of we need to do deportations, and we need to get rid of the managerial class. Is that what you're saying?
You may say that. I couldn't possibly comment.
Okay.
But yeah, I think you're right in terms of the game and the hack and slash 'em kind of aspects that something happens. So I guess it is a bit different from a film. So they might have thought, okay, it's not such a big problem. The Gollum game flopped. I just felt it wasn't just the gameplay. It was the gameplay was bad, but in a way, gameplay, I wouldn't say it's second to story, but it's always going to be influenced by the kind of story you have. If you've got a certain set of characters, you can only do so much with them for it to be before the player experience breaks. So if and you're kind of alluding to this, if you've got hobbits, you can't really have them fighting hundreds of orcs at one time. Whereas if the guy in Shadow of Mordor, who, I mean, he's basically like Aragorn with superpowers. That's how I would describe him.
Yeah, he looks like Aragorn. By the power of Celebrimbor, right?
Right. So you can kind of believe that this character could be capable of this, and it's cool. So the character is both shaped by the gameplay, but as a consequence, the characterization thus puts a limit on the gameplay. And I just felt with the Golem game, his character puts a very heavy limit on what you can do with a game. His story puts a very heavy limit on it, and it would do the same with a film. And that, to me, is the big problem that they're going to face putting forward. I wonder, though, if they do it like a short film, and these days a short film would be an hour and a half or something, maybe that would be okay. But if it's short enough, it wouldn't drag on.
Yeah, but then it's not going to get the money.
Well, that's true, and Peter Jackson is not known for short films.
Indeed. Well, I think we should wrap it up here. So people can find you at the Nathan Hood channel. Anything big coming up?
Yes, there's something very big coming up. There is on the 25th of May, Saturday the 25th, King Arthur Day. And King Arthur Day is going to be an exploration and celebration of the tradition or traditions that have grown up around Arthur for over 1,000 years. We're going to be looking at the historicity of Arthur. We've got people looking at Arthur in different eras, Arthur in art, Arthur in medieval politics, Arthur in film, Arthur in progressive rock in the 1970s. Just everything you can think of with Arthur, we really want to get to grips with and celebrate, and thus use as a spur for our own creativity today as well. And so I'd encourage everybody to tune in for that. It's going to be really, really big. I think we're looking at like 20 hours potentially of videos. So it's going to be, it really will be a day. I don't think anybody will last the whole day. And you yourself are taking part, Connor. So that's another reason why people should tune in for it. You've got one of the best topics, I think, of the day. Do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah.
Or is it a secret?
I'll be discussing with some guests. I'll be discussing the Green Knight, King Arthur, or sorry, what is it? Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. And we're going to be going through, we're going to be talking about Tolkien's translation of the work. So it's very much in line with what we're talking about here. And I'm very excited about that and excited to be a part of it. I encourage everyone to, everyone who can participate, as well as everyone who's interested in Arthur to participate by watching as many streams as you could possibly manage. As you said, you don't think people could last the whole day. I don't think that's going to be possible, but they come back, in future days.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's that's the thing. It's something that can last beyond the day itself, right? And you can dip in and out and watch what you want and go over it again. I must say, though, as well, in terms of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which is a great poem from the 14th century in England, it's probably my favorite story that's developed within the King Arthur tradition. It has this amazing zest for life. It has a really compelling kind of central challenge, I guess, for the character. And I can really see how it influenced Tolkien in big ways. I don't know I'll be interested to hear your thoughts in the stream, Connor, because I think you'll see things in there that you're like, oh, okay, that's maybe where Tolkien got some of his ideas from.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I don't want to spoil anything, though. Well, thank you, everyone. I have links to Nathan Hood's channel, so please, if you are not subscribed there, please go over there and subscribe. A lot of great content, Tolkien content, books content, mythology content, that sort of thing. All great. And to support this channel, if you like what you've seen today, please like, share, comment, and subscribe. God bless everyone. Bye.